In my mind. In the passage that we read from the Gospel of Luke, Jesus says this, "Yet today, tomorrow, and the next day, I must be on my way, because it is impossible for a prophet to be killed away from Jerusalem." I'm intrigued by that statement of Jesus. For one thing, it's one of the very few times that Jesus actually self-identifies as a prophet. We have this occasion and the occasion in Nazareth when he states that no prophet is recognized in his own hometown. Other than that, he tends to refer to himself in more cryptic terms, son of man, or he simply gets on with the business of doing what he's here to do. Mind you, there are plenty of occasions throughout the Gospels when we're told that he was certainly looked upon as a prophet by others. In Matthew 14, it says, though Herod wanted to put him to death, he feared the crowd because they regarded him as a prophet. Matthew 21, the crowds were saying, this is the prophet Jesus from Nazareth in Galilee. Matthew 21 again, they wanted to arrest him, but they feared the crowds because they regarded him as a prophet. Luke 7, fear seized all of them and they glorified God, saying, a great prophet has risen among us, and God has looked favorably on his people. And finally, in the Gospel of John, the woman said to him, sir, I see that you are a prophet. Chapter 6, when the people saw the sign that he had done, they began to say, this is indeed the prophet who is to come into the world. John 7, when they heard these words, some in the crowd said, this is really the prophet. John 9, so they said again to the blind man, what do you say about him? It was your eyes he opened. He said, he's a prophet. That last passage is the lectionary reading for a year from now. And I was very tempted to home in on this blind man who was given his sight back. I won't today, but I hope I'm still around next year to attack it then. Anyway, there seems to be then a fairly widespread perception of Jesus as a prophet, as someone who has been sent by God. But to get back to the verse in Luke that I read, it is, as I said, one of the only occasions where Jesus himself uses the term to describe himself. Yet today, tomorrow, and the next day, I must be on my way, because it is impossible for a prophet to be killed away from Jerusalem. Now, the immediate context for that statement about prophets being killed is the threat to Jesus from Herod. That's the immediate setting why he even says something like this. But I'd like to look a little bit more closely at what's behind Jesus' declaration that it's impossible for a prophet to be killed away from Jerusalem. And on one level, I suppose it could simply be an acknowledgement that this is how things have tended to play out in ancient Israel. We don't actually have much historical or textual evidence to know whether or not the prophets of Israel were actually only killed in Jerusalem. There's some oral tradition around the deaths of some of the prophets, but there's not a lot of written history. But I suppose it could be a reference to a pattern of life in the nation. On the other hand, I suspect that it could also be taken as a reference to the symbolic importance of Jerusalem as the religious heart of the nation, and the place where the truly significant events occur. And given the fact that the temple was located there, it's then, of course, the locus of the spiritual hopes of the nation and the people, and the place where God is most directly in touch with the nation of Israel. But that, then, I think, begs the question. If Jerusalem is the religious heart of the nation, then why on earth would that be the place where God's messengers are most brutally treated? Wouldn't it more reasonably be the place where God's messengers are embraced, honored, and listened to? What is it about a place of worship and a city of peace, a Jerusalem, a city of shalom, that can provide a setting for such violence, and such overt rejection of God and God's way. One obvious answer, I think, to that is the threat caused to the established institutions by a prophet who's calling the people or the nation to repentance, with the implied criticism that the religious leaders have failed in their task. But let me bring the context down to a more intimate level from the high politics of established religion. What is it? What is it about a space like this that can pose a threat to anyone? What is it about a place of worship? A place where one comes to see God, that can make it a target for hate, intolerance, and violence? What is it on a Sunday like today, when the suggested lectionary theme is God gathers us together in safe shelter, and the psalm we read promises that he will hide me in his shelter in the day of trouble, he will conceal me under the cover of his tent, he will set me high on a rock? What is it on a Sunday like today that puts the lie to that promise? Whether that place of worship is a Christian church, a Jewish synagogue, a Hindu temple, a Sikh Gurdwara, or a Muslim mosque, what is it about such a place that can trigger acts of violence such as those we've seen against churches in northern Nigeria, at churches in the United States, at mosques in Quebec City and in Paris, at the synagogue in Pittsburgh, and most recently at the mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand? I'm not sure that I can even come close to an answer to that question, because I can't wrap my head around what it would take for someone to be psychologically capable of such acts, to enter a place of worship and just take aim at whoever happens to be in their sights. I think part of the answer is that to some extent these attacks aren't sometimes attacks against places of worship per se, so much as attacks against locations where people of a certain identity conveniently gather. The victims may be Christian, or Jewish, or Muslim, but they're sometimes also Black, or Arab, or immigrants, or refugees, or a place that is supportive of immigrants or refugees. But then again, sometimes the attacks are specifically because the intended victims are Christian, or Jewish, or Muslim. And that's where I stumble. And I'm frankly discouraged by the number of times that I felt the need to address this issue of religious violence over the course of the relatively short time that I've been in a pastoral role here at MFM. As someone who's embraced the idea, along with the Apostle James, that an honest seeking after God is a thing to be encouraged and celebrated, even if I may disagree with the path chosen by some, I find it disheartening when extremism of the sort we've seen on the weekend takes place. And I suppose it might be possible to find comfort in the fact that the numbers of attacks of this sort are quite few, and they're far between, suggesting perhaps that the problems of this kind of hate are marginal at best. As I sat in my local Tim Hortons yesterday, for example, working on this meditation, my place of quiet repose, I couldn't help taking note of the diversity around me. Male, female, Black, white, brown, Middle Eastern, Asian, English-speaking, French, Spanish, Creole, Arabic, Italian, Chinese, and any number of other languages that I didn't recognize. Women with hijabs, sitting and chatting and laughing with other women without hijabs. A relatively quiet, calm, normal environment. And now I know that the surface appearance of calm and normalcy can sometimes hide an underlying tension that only rarely flares up. And in a way, it might even seem extraordinary. There aren't more examples of tension or outright violence given the many ways that we differ from each other. When the Maison de l'Amitié, for example, was housing refugee claimants up on the third floor, where it's now a student residence, I was always impressed that there actually wasn't more conflict between the residents, given the varieties of diversity of countries of origin and the risk of cultural misunderstandings. But for whatever reason, there was remarkably little conflict in the residents, in spite of the myriad potential points of disagreement. I suppose the risk perhaps might have been higher if everybody was from the same country, from different camps. There probably would have been more risk of friction. But it might be possible to find comfort in the absence of regular violent outbursts globally, except that one suspects that these occasional extreme acts of violence are only symptomatic of a deeper antagonism present in certain strata of society, and that the risk is always there that the violence can escalate in unpredictable ways, or that the antagonism can find other ways of expressing itself. I think it's understandable, but ultimately tragic, that the authorities in New Zealand recommended that Muslims not attend mosque on Friday. The shootings were reported. Understandable, because they hadn't yet had time to assess the risk to other mosques, and they had a responsibility to protect their fellow citizens. I am, though, deeply encouraged by the words of the Prime Minister of New Zealand, Jacinda Ardern, when she tweets that what has happened in Christchurch is an extraordinary act of unprecedented violence. It has no place in New Zealand. Many of those affected will be members of our migrant communities. New Zealand is their home. They are us. They are us. I find it difficult to read those words because they're in such stark contrast to the attitudes underlying attacks of this kind. And yet, they're such inspiring words to me. They're words that need to be repeated over and over again until it sinks in that what separates us is usually not a real threat from the other, but an inability to see ourselves in the faces of those we fear. They are us. I'm convinced that most people in this world, on this planet, simply want a space where they can live a decent life, be respected for who they are, and for those who are people of faith, feel that they are free to worship in the way they choose. I've said many times that I'm not an activist. I'm too introverted to be a regular participant at demonstrations and protests. And I think that there are times when actions are needed, but I also think there are times when space for grief is necessary. Space where one can simply try to digest what's happened and come to terms with the loss. Space where one can seek comfort and perhaps offer comfort in personal and more intimate ways. Yesterday, my daughter Elizabeth, also an introvert like her dad, shared a post of a four-frame comic strip. The first frame has a partial headshot of a woman with a thought balloon saying, "I've never been one to talk much." The second frame has much the same shot with the thought balloon, "I'm a quiet person, and most of the time I'm okay with that." The third frame, "But sometimes." The final frame then has the thought balloon saying, "Sometimes I really wish I knew what to say," as the shot pulls back to show her sitting by a hijab-wearing friend with a tear rolling down her cheek. Sometimes there's really not much that can be said. Sometimes I think in a circle like MFM, it feels like saying anything is simply preaching to the choir. Of course, what's happened is terrible and should never happen anyway. Of course, the victims of the shootings in New Zealand are innocent Muslims, guilty of nothing other than having a particular view of God. But sometimes, as we go about the business of living faithful Christian lives, I think even we need to be reminded that they are us. Thank you.